Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Mr. Mikhail's Manor of Mischief, Magic, and Mystery, the podcast where we talk about music, the occult, and just day-to-day life. I am your host, Andrew Mikhail, and welcome to the 6M Podcast. And we're back. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Mr. Mikhail's Manor of Mischief, Magic, and Mystery, aka the 6M Podcast. Today, I am joined by a very, very special guest. Some of you might know him as the Pied Piper of Crete, Al Slager is his real name. And I am joined today with the one and only Al Slager, longtime friend, partner in crime, and many other things. Welcome, everybody. Welcome, Al. Hi, Al. How are you doing today?
Thanks for having me.
No problem.
I'm doing well. Yourself?
Doing well. For those of you that are listening, this is actually our first time doing a Zoom podcast, and we are actually recording video for this podcast, so we're trying out some things that we've never done before. Hopefully, we're going to be branching out and hopefully having Al on more often and whatnot, but it all depends. How are we doing? How are we doing? What you drinking there, Al? What you got there?
Oh, gee, there's a hurricane on a Tuesday.
A hurricane?
Come home and
too soon? I see you wearing a crowbar shirt.
Yeah, standard fare for me. You know that. I'm not shy about the bands I like, and I endorse them full tilt. You know,
attaboy.
So you're saying something, what, the hurricane, crowbar shirt? Yeah, you guessed it. I love New Orleans. So,
yeah.
Yeah, fuck, man. Yeah.
I've been keeping on your socials as of late. I know I was supposed to join you watching the Down live stream. How was that?
Yeah. You know what? I didn't go into it with a lot of crazy expectations. Didn't really even know how it was going to work. But yeah, it was incredible. Completely pro audio, multi cameras set up, boom cameras, still cameras, everything. Full production, lighting, video screens, full amp wall.
Was it rocking oranges?
Yeah, and it was. They had the oranges and the Randalls. The old Randalls from the 90s. So okay. It was quite nice to have that nice audio blend of, I'm not sure who was playing out of what, but it sounded killer. And that was great. Phil sounded great.
Yeah. I saw that since you're wearing a crowbar shirt, I saw that on Kirk's side, there was like an X pattern where it was an orange to an orange with a diagonal. I think it was a Marshall or Randalls.
Are you talking about the cabs or the heads?
Yeah, the cabs.
Yeah, there were some Marshall cabs. I honestly think that they kind of just grabbed every piece of gear that they had down there and just threw it up in a stack. Because I've seen pictures of crowbars rehearsal room, and there's just a mountain of old cabs and old heads. So that's, I'm like, okay. I mean, that's obviously not a rented back line,
Yeah.
But, it was amazing. And, you know, they played the whole NOLA record, for those of you who don't know about it, which was 25 year anniversary this year of that record. And, I think they mixed it up with three songs off the second record, which was a nice little, you know, in between.
Yeah. Your phone's falling again. So, I know we just went straight into nerdery about NOLA bands and NOLA goodness. we could do that later. But for the listeners at home, why don't you describe who you are, how we met? Why are you the Pied Piper of Crete? Why is that? Do you even know why I call you that?
I have no idea why you call me that. That's been a tagline you've used for me for years now. Let's see. How did me and Andrew meet? Well, it all kind of started way back to Andrew's Oceano days. Back in that time, I was friends with some people that were close friends with the band Devil Driver. And how that all started was every time they would come to Chicago, they would have this one guy come out, and I don't remember his name or his company, but he had this barbecue company, and they would grill out for Devil Driver and just a huge spread on a very vast scale. And I was like, okay, that's pretty rad, you know? And I really got into Oceano, which a lot of people did, when the Depths record came out. And I noticed they were coming to town, so I hit them up on, I think it was MySpace back then. I don't even think I had a Facebook, and I was like, hey, you know, you guys are coming, you know, and I obviously assumed they're obviously not in a bus. I'll grill out for you guys. Just hang, you know. I've never really fanned out over musicians or whatever, even though we're roughly the same age. There's been a few times where I've kind of flipped out meeting people, but no offense. But back then it was more like, hey, I'll cook for you guys. You guys are a killer band, and I'm, you know, whatever, let's just hang.
And we basically treated you like you were family, you know, like there was no divide between us. Like, obviously if I was in the van doing stuff, if you came knocked on the window, obviously I would be like, hey, give me a second, you know, but we didn't really
Which
be
I think
like,
I did, but whatever
you did. I think you had meat in your hand when you did it. Like, huh?
That's
like
right. A sausage. I think it was,
but
smacking it on the fucking window.
But either way, you know, when was that? Was it like 10 plus years ago? So we've been friends
for... Whoever wants to get out there...
We've been friends for about 10 years.
Yeah.
And I remember...
I actually looked it up. I looked it up today to remember the cross. I tried to reference it. The tour name that I grilled out for you guys on was the California Love Tour with Winds of Plague.
Yeah.
So that was, I think, 2009, I think.
I think it was like winter of 2009. So like pretty much the California Love Tour was my last.
It was the fall, I think.
Yeah. It was my last real tour with the band. And I think I just had that barbecue and I was like, I'd rather just stay home.
Oh my God.
So I quit. Yeah. But you and I mean, so basically to sum it up for those of you listening.
That barbecue was just an extremely small blip on the saga of me and you.
Yeah. And the reason why I call you the Pied Piper of Crete is because, like the Pied Piper, you blow into your flute and all the rats come. They come on, follow you. So whenever you want me to fucking, whatever you want me and the lizard, or just me, even back in the day, to come over by you, which, you know, it's hard to pull me out of the manor.
Come on.
You play the flute. Come on. Follow me into darkness.
Yeah. There's been many a times.
Sing the song.
Oh my God. Boys.
Sing the song. So, you know, we became friends from MySpace, and you were in a couple bands back then too, yourself. And, you know, at that time, after grilling out, after hanging out, and a lot of generous offers of hanging out in other places, you and I, you know, I believe that I had quit the band and your band was going on. And I actually, I don't know if you remember this, but when Serpents was first an idea,
yep,
you were the first guy to drum with me. You remember that?
I was. I remember that very well. Oh, yeah. I remember very well.
What was your band's name?
First time. The band that was in that genre was called Before Night Falls.
That's what it was.
And yeah, we had you know, a decent amount of local success, opened up for, I guess, you know, quite a few bands, well-known bands in that genre of music. But we had other opportunities, but certain guys in the band didn't feel like they wanted to expand it on a, I guess you could say, a national level. And that was the point where I was just like, I'm done. They cared more about the fashion aspect of it, and let's all wear matching polos and Nike SBs on stage. And I was like, yo, dude, I'm just trying to smoke cigarettes and take these speed pills. And, you know,
yeah.
We didn't click.
But I remember you guys played a lot of big shows too. I mean, even to this day,
yeah,
you are still quite the personality in the heavy music scene. So like, even back then, you're rubbing shoulders with like a lot of the deathcore guys. And then now, you know, I see you rubbing shoulders with like Kirk Weinstein and whatnot. It's kind of cool. It's kind of, yeah. I mean, you honestly, may have said
everything was.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was going to say, you may have said that, you know, you stepped away from that band and then kind of did your own thing. And from what I remember, you also joined another band after that for a little bit, just filling in. But I always remember you telling me that, you know, you're just playing to play. Like, and you're mainly a drummer and now you're a guitarist, which is, you know, even a more testament to sometimes if you just want to do it, just do it for the love of doing it, you know? And I remember at the time you,
right.
And you were really trying to fucking like do it. And I could see why, man, you were all over the place.
Yeah. Fun fact. And I don't know if you've ever known this. I don't even know if I've ever told you, actually. Not a lot of people know. When it comes to music, I bought Skinbolesk House in 2012, December of 2012, my home. Mm-hmm. In the summer, I believe it was, of 2013, I had the opportunity to go down and audition drums for a band whose drummer just recently passed away. And I just hit up the guitar player of the band and the singer, and I was like, hey, I know you guys' material. I'm a drummer. I'm from Chicago. If you wanted me to try out, you know, let me know. And they were down for it, and they were like, yeah, come on down. And logistically and financially, I just couldn't make it. And they understood, and they now have somebody else. But that band was I Hate God. I talked to Jimmy Bauer on Facebook and Mike Williams, and they were like, yeah, grab your kit, come on down, we'll try you out. Everything was set in place. I just couldn't afford to take the time off of work because I still had a really decent job at the time. Yeah, and owning a new house, it just, looking back in hindsight, I'm like, yeah, do I regret it? Yeah, kind of. But that was before, you know, a lot of things changed for me. You know, it was before the wife. It was before a lot of things. So, yeah, that was. It wasn't like planned.
But even then, look at things now. Look at how they are now, especially with the music industry.
Exactly.
So you would have
exactly. So I'm like,
yeah. Which is odd because I don't think you've ever told me you tried out for I Hate God. So that makes
I never technically tried out, but I had the opportunity.
I was gonna say that makes two of us.
I remember, yeah, somebody's tried out for bass for Crowbar.
Yeah. I was a day too late, I guess. I don't know. weren't you trying out too? You son of a bitch.
No, I just said I was trying out to ruffle your feathers because I knew you were going to get ruffled, and that's exactly why I couldn't play bass, and back then I couldn't really even play guitar. I just recently picked up guitar a couple of years ago, and I told myself, because I've always been a lefty, and back in the day, I would always just take righty guitars upside down, you know, and just play them upside down. And I told myself, if I'm going to do this again, I'm going to do it the right way. Yeah, and I never did anything worth a shit. I just did crappy bar riffs. But I told myself, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it the right way. So I pretty much... I bought a left-handed guitar and retaught myself how to play guitar the right way. Left-handed, obviously, but the correct way, instead of flipping it and all that bullshit. I just like, no, fuck that. I'm going to do it the right way. To actually learn stuff, not just fart around, but going back to, you know, everything with Kirk, it's the same thing with you, man. Also backtracking to my metalcore band, or whatever you want to call us back in the day. It just comes down to treating people like people and not going up to somebody and going, oh man, your new record's great. Cause all you're going to get out of that is, oh, thanks man. And off they go. Because they hear it all day. You know, they hear it from everybody. If you treat people like just people, strike up a conversation about something that they like or whatever, you're in. And that's, you know, and my friendship with Kirk kind of grew throughout the years, because obviously he knows a lot of people, but now it's to the point where we actually, you know, talk regularly and communicate. Yeah. And same with his wife Robin and Stephanie and my wife, and we spent some time with them in New Orleans 2 years ago, I believe it was. Yeah, fun fact that my wife never knew what a lemon drop shot was, and Kirk and Robin told her what it was, and now she like, oh my God, they're delicious. So that was a kind of funny side note. And when we went down there, Stephanie had no idea how much of a known musician he was until I believe she saw like an open air video of Down, and she was just like, oh my God. Like, yeah. But that was actually when we went and saw Crowbar in New Orleans. It was a late honeymoon kind of, and we went down there and they were playing Oddfellows Rest in its entirety. So I had to kind of shimmy that into the whole vacation, and it was well worth it. It was well worth it. There's always an end game, you know, let's go to New Orleans. It's going to be beautiful. Oh, by the way, Crowbar's playing at Southport Music Hall. Have you ever been there?
Probably not. No.
No, it's, and same thing. I was like, oh, you know, I've never heard of this venue, and I've never been there, obviously. And you go there with a certain expectation, and it was way bigger than I thought. And it was beautiful. It was right on the Mississippi River. It was close to Magazine Street. So it was, you know, it was a great place. And it was a killer show.
Is there a House of Blues in New Orleans?
There is. And it's like downtown New Orleans.
Okay. I think that's the only place I've played in New Orleans, like proper.
Okay.
I've always played in like Metairie and a bunch of other places, but Metairie is always the most fun because it's always the most like death metal like scene out there. But
right,
I remember I think I was on tour with Devil Driver, which again back then, like that's when our paths
were crossing. The Thrash and Burn tour, man.
Yeah. And I remember Dez was like, all the Devil Driver guys was like, hey, we're all going to Phil's house. And I was just like, but we had to drive to do another show as well. So we didn't have a day off. No days off back then.
Yeah.
But
no. Travel days.
But so
travel after days your, and show days.
After your time in that band. So back to the band, right? So we became friends.
Yeah.
We both kind of did our thing musically. Like when I stepped back from Ocean Zero, you started doing your stuff with your band. And I was like, I got this idea for Serpents. And, you know, I remember your drumming from back then was very like Hoagland-esque. You were really, big fan of, you know, at least at the time, like Raymond Herrera's drumming, like Fear Factory kind of drumming, right?
Right.
And we jammed some of the first songs together in your basement. And I think at the time I wanted to put the idea Serpents to bed because I think I got offered another gig. I don't know if you remember. Thick as Blood.
Yeah, I do actually.
At the time. Yeah. Yep. And I was like, oh, fuck it. I'm moving to Florida. I'm doing all this shit. And, you know, I did that. And you continued. I think you joined another band, Ryan's band, called Cryptic Oath.
Yeah.
Check them out.
Yep.
If you haven't already.
Yeah, check them out.
Great Chicago. What would you call it? Like a thrash death metal band?
Yeah, I'd say just a nice cross between thrash and death. I'm sure Ryan would disagree with me wholeheartedly. another mutual friend between both of us.
Great dude, great guitar player.
Exceptional guitar player.
Pipe stretched.
And the world's pickiest eater. And I will put it on record, the world's pickiest eater.
If it's not wild shot.
Every time I have a get together with multiple people and Ryan's one of them, I always tell him to come a half hour before everybody else and make him try the food. I'm serious, because if it's not cooked enough or if it's too raw, he'll lose his fucking mind. Not lose his mind, but he'll be like, dude, I got to cook this more. And I go, okay. So I've gotten used to, hey man, I'll tell, you know, you come at 5. I'll tell Ryan, come at 4:30.
Chicken spaghetti.
Hell of a guy. Oh boy.
Where's the chicken, Ryan?
5-gallon vat of just pasta and chicken and just a bath bomb of spices.
Ryan is also the proprietor. Ryan is also the proprietor of something you and I have gotten to know over the years, of something called,
I think you more than me, pal,
Fart Dust. The copyright trademark per Ryan Keene. Fart Dust is something all poisoned me with most of the time when I had dates to go on or something, right? That's pretty much
Andy would come to Andy would come to Skinbolesque and we'd have a nice chicken and pasta dinner and everything was just dosed with fart dust. And he'd be off on his way to the city to meet somebody and but the next day I couldn't do shit. I didn't even want to move. My stomach felt like it was gonna explode. What was in that stuff? And that cue the birth of fart dust.
It's a secret blend.
I've known Ryan. I've known him for a long time as well, and I still don't even know what's in it. And he won't tell anybody. And that's whatever. And I told him, dude, you need to copyright it, man. Because somewhere in some bougie boutique grocery store, it'll be on the shelf and somebody will love it.
So if anybody wants to capitalize on fart dust, CC Ryan Keene, check him out. But
indeed.
So in between that time, because, you know, I started touring with other bands and you were filling in for Cryptic Oath and whatnot. You know, I came back home.
Well, I wasn't really filling in for them. It was more or less like Ryan started working at my job and, you know, I mean, hey, guy wearing a Cannibal Corpse shirt and got long hair, I'm sure he's into good music. So we started talking and he brought up that he was in a band and his drummer sucked and he couldn't keep time. And I'm like, well, I'm a drummer and I'm pretty decent at keeping time. So let's jam. Yeah. So I jammed and I filled in for one record. We did one record with that band and played a few shows. And the thing with me is, and I'll always love that style of music, listening to it, mind you. But when the time signatures get so crazy, I have to watch the click track to know what time. Personally, it's just not for me to play. I like just jamming. I like just riffs and just jamming. I don't want to think while I'm playing, you know.
Well, that might not be
for everybody.
Yeah. That's the thing about Ryan as a player. He's very technical to the point that him and the Lizard at Skinbolesque House had a 15-minute argument about modes. Do you remember that?
Oh, that was the night of the bonfire night.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Of you that don't know, the Lizard is a violinist and Ryan is a crazy guitarist. And they were arguing about the existence of modes. And I'm not going to say who was for what, but let's just say Ryan stuck to his guns on that one. But,
yep.
Yeah. I mean, even with what you're playing now, it's way more like, as your friend, like I could tell that it's way more, emotional, dirty. I mean, you got a Randall amp behind you. I know you have a Sun amp, so you like droney, dirty, I don't know, music. And like remembering the fact that you played like Hoagland and like Atomic Clock worshipped, you know, it's just always weird to think about. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's still in him if he wants to bust it out, which is fucking awesome, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, deep down, it's always been doomy, sludgy stuff. I mean, it all goes back to when I was in fifth grade going to some math tutor over the summer and sitting in my mom's car and flipping the radio channels. And I heard Iron Man and it stuck in my head ever since then. And it's always been Sabbath. Sabbath's always been number one. And you know that, like everybody goes, oh, check out this new band. Or, you know, my 25-year-old brother will come and show me some new deathcore band. And I go, yeah, it's cool, but it's not Warpix. You know, that's just how my mind is. I love just simplicity, because to me, and I've told this to Ryan before and he doesn't agree, but I would rather take one strong, powerful note than a million notes. And that's why I've gravitated more towards that, you know. And I think getting older has something to do with it too, because I'm just, you know, I'm going back and appreciating stuff that I've either overlooked or haven't listened to in a long time. And less is more, man. You know, that's just my approach to music.
Yeah. Well, what's the, I think it's a Gene Simmons, Keep It Simple, Stupid, Kiss.
You know? Yep.
But honestly, you know me, like I've been in death metal bands for the majority of my career.
Sure.
And with that comes technical drummers, technical guitar players, technical, you know, bassists even. And, you know, even today, like with my guy Miles, like, well, I sometimes have to reel him in, because he starts getting crazy with like the, you know, I had perfect example. You heard some of this new Serpents material I've got cooking, and it's more not... It's more raw and more like less frills. And like I'll send it over to the guys and my guitar player is like, we should throw in some inverted octaves with a nice arpeggio. I'm like, dude, hold on a second. Like, you know, because I'm a fan of that feel, you know, and a lot of black metal bands are starting to do it right, I think. You know, like Behemoth or Batushka, like whatever. And I think like I'm even starting to stray away from the, you know, the necrophages of the scene. You know what I mean? Where everything's just like,
right.
It's like, all right, dude, we get it. We get it.
Right.
But
I agree.
But
now that's a perfect example. If you look at Behemoth 10 years ago and Behemoth today, it's almost like they're two completely different bands.
Oh yeah.
Musically I would even go as far as say like, yeah, musically, but production wise too, You know, and I still love Behemoth. And, you know, when you look at records like The Satanist and their newest one, I Loved You at Your Darkest, at first I didn't like The Satanist because I'm like, oh, the production seems just, it's just, it, you know, it took a minute to get used to that. But now with their newest record, and I believe all four of us were at the House of Blues show they played in Chicago, not together, obviously, but I know you and the Lizard were there, and me and Stephanie were, had our own box, our opera box there, but it was amazing. You know, it was an absolutely incredible show.
What'd you think about Wolves in the Throne Room?
I don't remember. I was too busy arguing with security about people coming in, people coming into our opera box. So basically, I think I told you the story, but my previous employer bought an opera box for the show and handed out all these tickets to people. Hey, we have an opera box for Behemoth. Anybody who wants to go, let us know, and we'll put your name on the list. Mm-hmm. So I told the wife, hey, let's go. So we went up to the show, got there, not early, but I think as the opening band was going on. Yeah. And we get up to the skybox, or the opera box, I should say, and we're the only ones in there. I'm like, oh, okay, I'm sure people will be showing up. And yeah, boy, nobody showed up. Except for, I guess it was like, I'm sorry?
And that's when you were working for a known Midwest brewery.
Yes, right? Heavy metal themed, not themed, I guess you could say, but a metal-based brewery. Yeah.
So that goes part of the territory. It's kind of funny if you go...
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. If you actually even go back on Behemoth's Instagram, during that tour, they would take shots of the crowd behind the drum riser, and
I remember
in the
that.
Chicago shot, it's hilarious because you see the whole place is just jam-packed except for the one opera box up here, and there's only two people, and that's me and her. I thought it was hysterical. We got home that night and she goes in the kitchen and she yells, oh my god, we're on their Instagram. I get on there really quick and I look and I go, I figured it was like a close-up of us, like, oh, these two assholes. But no, it was a good time, man. But yeah, going back to, you know, musically, I think it's leaps and bounds better than their old stuff. Yeah, their old stuff is phenomenal, don't get me wrong. Yeah. And I remember seeing them back in the day, and their live attitude was insane, and their energy. But there's still an energy with them now, but it's more morose and just like focused, you know. It's not just chaos, which chaos is a good thing, mind you, but now it's very, very laser focused.
Well, that's what I was gonna get at, is the fact that, like, I'm not shitting on the bands that are like Necrophagist, and it's just like fucking notes, you know, blasts, and like those songs have its day, they have its moments. Like, not saying like as a whole, I'm saying like for me, like one day I want to hear that, and then the next day I want to hear fucking, you know, ABBA. So it's, I'm not shitting on that, and I just want the listeners to know that I'm all for that. But, you know, like you said, as you get older, you're just kind of like, man, like these classic quote unquote bands were doing something right. And, you know, you have all these modern bands coming out left and right. Obviously, we all came out at a different era of the music industry, but, like, you know, they could learn something from, you know, the old guys. You know, keep it simple, stupid.
I agree.
It's the easiest thing.
Yeah.
Like, even when I'm writing,
you know, like
this new record, same thing. I'm like, I'll have to stop and be like, dude, keep it simple, stupid. Like, don't get too crazy. Like, make a song rather than a statement about how sick I can play guitar, you know?
Yeah.
What were you going to say?
I agree. Yeah. Well, no, I was just saying the same goes for me when it comes to music. Like, I don't just necessarily only listen to New Orleans bands or what have you, but, like, you know, perfect example today, I'll split it up between this morning going into work at 5 a.m, listening to In Trance by the Scorpions. Lunch break today, listening to Terry Reid seat of memory. And on the way home, I was listening to Bolt Thrower. So, you know, there's a nice eclectic group, you know, of a little bit of everything.
And I remember, because now we're starting to go past towards the Cryptic Oath days and past my days with like Legend, where I was really starting to focus on Serpents again. And I remember at the time, you were the first person. I think we were at a Wingstop parking lot? And I was in your car, and you're like, "You ever heard Ghost?" And I'm like, "No."
I think it was the fucking Jamba Juice in Schaumburg. I swear to God. I think was it the Jamba Juice in Schaumburg, right? I think so.
And you played
pre-gaming for one of our Rage in the Cage nights.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Opus Eponymous. Yep.
And I remember that was like before anybody even like heard it. I think the only time people heard of Ghost was Phil Anselmo was wearing a Ghost shirt and James Hetfield was talking about this band named Ghost. And you were like, check out this band. And it was fucking awesome. And even I still listen to Ghost today, even though it's a completely different band. But they, look what happened from them, like from back then when you showed it to me. Like, they went total
and classic. It's crazy when you bring up Ghost, because now they're playing soccer stadiums, you know, with Iron Maiden. They're opening up for, you know, just massive, opening up for Metallica in these huge arenas and stadiums. I saw them in Chicago on their first U.S. tour, the 13 Dates of Doom tour at the Bottom Lounge. There must not have been, I'd say easily less than 200 people there. And people almost viewed it as like a joke, like a comedy act, because they're like, oh, this fucking band that wears, because back then their production wasn't as big, and you know, the guys just wore plain black like ninja masks, and it was nothing like it is today. But seeing that stem to the next time I saw Ghost was the it was called the Heritage Hunter Tour. Do you remember that tour?
No. Was that the tour
It was at the Riviera. I'm sorry?
Was I at the Skin Burlesque?
No.
There was one night where you went.
You weren't.
And you're like, I'm going to see Ghost, and I just stayed at your house.
That was the third time I saw Ghost. The Heritage Hunter Tour was at the Riviera, and it was Opeth, Mastodon, and Ghost.
I remember that.
And that was still, and that was the second time I saw them, but just from their first 13-date U.S. tour, and the second time I saw them and how much their production grew then, it was like, holy fuck, they have these huge stained glass scrims, and there are only three of them, but it's just like, it was insane. And then
something nobody was doing back then.
No, it wasn't. And back then, they still had their anonymous, you know, identities, and nobody really had any fucking idea who was in that band. And that's kind of why it wasn't just necessarily the fact that they sounded like, you know, early 80s, you know, Blue Oyster Cult and Merciful Fate, which I love. I just love the simplicity of it. And there was no guttural screaming. It was actual harmonied vocals, and it was... That's what drew me to Ghost back in the day, and the fact that they were just completely flat out singing about Satan and making it sound so fucking happy. And I was like, this is incredible. You know, it's like just the fact that they're, if you weren't listening to the lyrics, it was just all this, you know, happy, slappy music, but they're singing about human sacrifices. And I was like, wow, this is incredible. But it almost brought me back to being a kid.
I was going to say, I remember people were calling it like Scooby-Doo rock because of how it sounded.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I thought it was fantastic because it also brought me back to being a kid in the 90s when Slipknot first came out. And who are they? You know, because by that time, Slipknot's identities were completely out in the open. And it also kind of made me feel like how the kids felt in the 70s with Kiss. You know?
Yeah.
Who the fuck are these people? Let's just jam and enjoy the music, you know? And that's what it comes down to me. I don't care about what the fuck they look like. As long as it sounds good, I'm in, you know?
Yeah.
And the same goes for Batushka. You know, obviously that has all been fucking imploded by now, but yeah, I mean, and it's funny because they did a US tour and I'm like, you know what? I was like, fuck it. I'm going to give these guys a chance. And I listened to them and I loved them. And I missed their show in Chicago by like a day and a half or like 2 days. I was so fucking pissed because I was like, oh my God, I wish I could have seen these guys. And I was just like, they were all over my Facebook. And I was like, well, that's obviously why, because they were just in town. And I was like, God damn it. I wish. And now, you know, it's that's who the fuck knows when that's going to happen. But
yeah. And that's the thing, like back. So like you said, you know, with Slipknot, with Kiss, with, you know, a bunch of bands that have decided to be like, all right, the music is more important and really hide who they are. That mystique is what draws a lot of people in the first place. And I remember even with Serpents, I don't know if you remember this, but I was trying to do that. Like, I didn't want anybody to know who was in the band. I just wanted us to be like... The logo back then, if you remember from MySpace, was just three Ouroboruses like interlinked with each other. And
yeah,
it was management at the time that was like, no, we need to know, or the kids want pictures. They want to know, blah, 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 blah. So then we fucking shot ourselves in the foot and we went against our vision. But it's a perfect testament to, you know, how special something is when it's still mysterious to when it's unveiled. Like, perfect example now with Ghost, everybody knows it's Tobias Forge with, you know,
right,
hired guns, essentially. You know, same thing with Kiss. Like,
completely new hired guns. Yeah.
Yeah. Once, same thing with Kiss. Like, once they went, you know, without the makeup, everyone was like, ew, you know? And,
yeah, it's like,
That's the thing that's fucked up about the industry today is the fact that, like, we're really not allowed anymore to be mysterious. Or, like, even when I wrote Temet Nosse, like, for 4 years, like, when you and I stopped talking and, like, I kind of disappeared off socials minus, like, promoting the band here and there. And the damage that 4 year period has done to, like, our growth, or like, you know, obviously musically that period away from everything was amazing. Like, it's one of my favorite records I've ever done, but unfortunately, like,
yeah,
it murdered our online presence to the point where people were like, wait, this is still a band, you know? And it's everybody, everybody today, everybody's a coach. Everybody's telling you, you know, you gotta show every aspect of your life. You have to show, you know, what are you thinking at all times? You have to, you know, what are your political beliefs? What do you want to stand for? Blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, why can't we just do that? Like what Ghost did or whatever. Like, why can't we do that anymore? It sucks. And
right.
Yeah, it is a choice in artistry, but it's also a choice in production. And that's something I think American bands are lacking a lot, is production. And you and I from, okay, so starting to,
oh God, is this a segue into our
no, but so
go ahead.
After the, like what I was saying, after the legend period, when I was starting to take Serpents seriously again while also being in Straight Line Stitch, Defiler, you and I think, like, you actually started working on the other side of the stage behind the scenes.
Yep.
So we were hanging out a lot more. We were getting into a lot of trouble, drinking a lot of jugs of wine. And, you know, I get a call from Al. He goes, what are you doing tonight? I'm like, or no, was it today? What are you doing today? I'm like, I don't know, probably writing, sitting in my grandparents' house in my room, you know? You're like, why don't you come work this Cottonmouth King show? You remember that?
Yeah, boy, I do. Kind of. Because, I kind of remember it.
Well, you started working at a venue in Chicago. It shall not be named. It's no longer around.
Yeah. So I will give the extremely brief story of my introduction to stage work. So, which is the thing I still do to this day. On Facebook, the owner of this venue made a post and said, looking for some guys with some muscle to move some band gear. The gig pays. Message me if interested. I said, well, hell, I knew the guy. I knew the venue. I was somewhat close. Yeah, I'll hit him up. Pays $100. Cool. Right on. I can use $100. Yeah, come out here Saturday. And come out here Saturday morning and we'll put you to work. Awesome. Sounds good. I go out to the venue. And for some reason, I don't even know why, but I didn't look up who the band was. Had no idea. Just kind of just blindly going into it. I figured, fuck it. Go make $100. And this is, mind you, my first time ever being a quote-unquote stagehand, because back then I definitely wasn't a stagehand. I was more or less just a guy slinging gear. My first experience ever was a GWAR show. Completely green, didn't know fuck all about stage work, anything.
I forgot about that. And
GWAR was my first time ever as a stagehand. And I loved it. It was great. So much that I agreed to come back the next day to do, I think it was the Metal Alliance tour, which was like 8 death metal bands. It was just insane. And you're familiar with the venue I'm speaking of. So fitting pretty much 8 double bass drum sets, 8 guitar rigs, because ain't nobody sharing backline on tours like that. Everybody has to have their own shit. So fitting it all into the tiny kitchen / backstage / whatever area. It was interesting. And I definitely, learned my chops and got someone decent at it. And it's kind of funny because that whole career of mine, which is still to this day, kind of backtracked to being friends with metalcore and deathcore bands to go forward, to progress my career as a stagehand. Because you know the story of Warped Tour 2013, correct?
I don't. Or maybe I do. So, no, you can tell it though for the people listening anyways.
Yeah, so Warped Tour 2013, and I've never been to a Warped Tour in my life. Never wanted to, never had the desire to. But back in that day and back of the days of my metalcore band, I became really close with the late, great Justin Lowe of After the Burial. And After the Burial was on that, I think it was either 2012 or 2013. I can't remember. No,
I think
it was even 2011. Somebody figure it out and let me know. But whatever year between 2011 and, it couldn't have been 2013. It was 2012 because I remember. So anyway, I go to Warped Tour, go to their stage, and I happen to come across a guy that I knew from another venue in Chicago, a guy who was a stage manager at a different venue. And I was like, oh man, what are you doing here? And he had a big binder of guitar picks with him, and he was showing Justin and Trent all of his guitar picks, and they were giving him picks and so forth. So I go up to him and I go, dude, what are you doing here? He goes, oh, I work here. I was like, oh, I'd love to work here. He goes, and he hands me his card, and I was like, give me a call. I'll, see what you can do. 2 weeks later, I get a call to work Mayhem Fest with Slayer and Slipknot. And that was my first time in the big leagues, I guess we could say.
Very much so.
And ever since then, it's been, just absolute chaos every summer for me. But, this summer is obviously for completely obvious reasons, this summer didn't happen. But, hopefully things can get for the better.
Well, I was going to get to that. So, when you started with GWAR, I remember it was more of a trial by fire because that's a very high detail gig in a very small place to do it. And I remember you were doing more shows and more shows, and you pretty much took control of the crew there. And I remember you giving me a call and being like, "Hey, dude, you want to come?" Wow. Yeah, you played the flute,
roped you in. Yep.
Yeah.
Let's come make some money and drink all the wine, boys.
Dude. And especially at that venue, it was pretty lax. So we had some good times there.
Yeah.
But you know, we dealt with we dealt with the best of them, and we dealt with the worst of them. And, you know, you got me in there, and it became like a normal thing. My first show was Cottonmouth Kings, and that was like the weirdest show to date that I've done. And I've done lots of other ones. And then at the big leagues, as you called it, you called me up for that as well. And I remember, again, I think I was sleeping in my car. I was sleeping in my car somewhere near the area, and you're like, "Hey, you want to come work over here?" I'm like, "I don't know." Keep in mind, like, I'm a musician. Like, I'm usually on the other end of things, being like, you know, I would like the monitors to be moved here or whatever. And then all of a sudden,
right?
You know, you're like, "Hey, you want to come do the big show?" And I'm like, "I don't know what the hell I would be doing." And you're like, just come. And I remember walking in after all you guys had the powwow and be like, "Oh, you must be Al's friend." And I'm like, "Hi."
And I remember that because it was a last minute call. I do remember that. We were short a guy. It was
for Luke and, Bryan.
Yeah. We were short a guy, and I was like, "I got a guy. He's a bit away, but he can make it." And I remember, I'm going to paraphrase my business agent who handled the payroll. "Just get him here. God damn it." Pretty much how it turned out, you know.
But honestly, it was a great experience. It was a great experience because, you know, not only did... like when you and I were working at that smaller venue, like I learned how to best keep the show rolling, how to best manage your stage, anything. And I still to this day take a lot of those ethics or whatever, and I apply them at like Serpent shows or whatever. Like I've actually had to do this for our shows, and sometimes people are appreciative and sometimes they'll be like, "Wow, that guy's a dick." And I'm like, "You'll thank me later." But then, you know, you took me to the big leagues and I got to learn a whole new appreciation for, you know, the road crew, like the real road crew, not just, you know, guitar tech or whatever. Like we're talking production teams of lighting, production teams of video, like what it takes to step into a venue that literally has nothing except for a couple lights, you know, for working, and then building everything you fucking could imagine. And you know, I got appreciation for production, you know, how to put on a great show, how to think outside of the box. I mean, you and I, we were tasked with building fucking Tommy Lee's roller coaster drum thing,
the Crucify. The Crucify.
Is that what it's called?
Oh, boy. Yeah.
But you know what I mean? Like, we...
burn into my memory, man. Yeah.
We've done a lot together and, you know, got into a lot of trouble together. And you and I, especially at these venues, were always known as like a team. Like a fucking screwball team. But we always got the job done. We got it done fast because most of the time we were on diet pills and espresso drinks,
black coffee. Yep.
And
give me a medium black with 12 turbo shots, please.
12? That was you.
Yeah.
That was you.
That was me.
I still partake in the 6 to 7 espresso shots, but that's when I need all the juice I can get. But, you know, taking a lot of that experience.
Yeah, I was the one.
And go ahead.
I was always the one up pretty much all night smoking cigarettes and drinking coffee, not wanting to go to bed. And you were the one that had to get some sleep. And I was got to get to the venue early, got to get ready. And you were the one always worried about making sure you had your breakfast. I don't know. I was just a totally different animal back then, man. Totally different animal.
But you also smoke cigs. So
like a train.
Exactly. So all you had to eat for the whole day, all you had was donuts and coffee and cigarettes.
China buffet.
Yeah. And so after that, we would fucking splurge going to China buffet or Panda Express.
Our $9 China buffet.
Attaboy.
Yep. Feel like dropping more than 10 bucks. Yep. Oh.
Honestly, like how badly we treated our bodies, but for some reason we were looking pretty good.
Yeah, my cheeks were a little sunken in, but I looked great, man. You know.
There's probably all that ass sweat for all day. Like we're coming back home and looking at the Dickie shorts just fucking crusted from all that ass sweat.
Peeling them off.
Rolling cables.
Oh yeah. Yep.
You're wrong, I'm wrong. You're fucking poof. I think that's when we got our appreciation for like the old Scottish man tantrums.
Hey! Yeah. You fucking bastard, what are you doing?
But either just way,
pissed.
Man.
Just absolutely pissed.
Oh, yeah. Like, you literally, they would be smiling from 1 second, and then all of a sudden, they just flip that switch, and their old roadie comes out. And like, hey, you fuck. What is he doing over there? Get over there. It was pretty funny. But, you know,
people don't realize about that industry is
things
move so quick. A lot of lifers, and things move so quick. That's the thing where you would have a roadie or a stagehand that was totally calm 1 minute, and all it takes is 1 second for something to go wrong, and that person just totally flips their script. And I've seen it quite a few times throughout the years, and it's been extremely interesting.
All it takes is the sound of a bolt dropping. So yep. somebody's ratcheting something.
What the fuck was that?
Do you not know your left from your right? Are you simple, boy? Are you simple? Turn it right.
Dude, but that's the thing, man. Like, these people are lifers, and I can't help but to think of everybody, including yourself. Like, you know, that's how you're paying your bills right now. You know, you're a stage guy, you know, stagehand, professional. I don't know what you would call it now. Union stagehand, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Is that the title? Union stagehand?
Journeyman stagehand, yeah.
Okay. So, you know, not only for local guys like yourself, but you also have these guys, you know, that have pretty much flown from all over the world to do a gig, and everybody's stuck at home for the summer, and it's looking like till next year. Like how
it's looking pretty grim.
And I know you've had to pick yourself up by the bootstraps and get another gig, but how is everybody else handling this situation right now? Do you know? Do you still keep in contact with everybody?
I still keep in contact with a few people. And same thing, man. Just everyone's just getting new gigs. Just trying to get gigs to, you know, make up for lost time and make up for lost wages. Same goes for a lot of the friends I've made working gigs, and a lot of the crew and tech friends that I've made throughout the country and throughout the world, actually. You know, I have roadie friends from South America, that, you know, same thing. They're just working in lumber yards or doing whatever they can, working at food stands. It's just anything to make money because their life is on the road. And obviously the road is closed right now. So it's hard for them. They're going absolutely crazy, but, you know, they're making do. And I always do wellness checks with everybody I know. Just, hey man, how you doing, brother? You know, and, yeah. You know, most of them seem to be all right. Yeah, I agree, man. Yeah. I agree.
And that's, or I forgot what I was going to say on that point, but, you know, you got me with the wellness checks. Like even everybody with the passing of the singer of Power Trip, you know, everybody, Riley from Power Trip, you heard them? It's like hardcore. Yeah. It's like Sepultura influenced hardcore. Like, I love it. And, you know, the singer passed away just like abruptly. And, you know, everybody like was caught blindsided. And, you know, it even made me think, like, you know, don't wait until your friends are gone for you to sit there and tell them how much they meant to you, you know? So, like, that's why,
I agree.
You know, I've been saying, like, even with the wellness checks, like, fucking good on you, because not a lot of people, you know, have the, I don't want to say the foresight, but, you know, everybody's dealing with their own problems, but it's always important to take care of everybody that you care about.
Right.
And, you know, even with, you know, Kirk from Crowbar or whoever, like, you're very well involved, even though when you're hurting a lot, your friends are hurting a lot. And I think that's what makes the scene richer. That's what makes our connections better. I don't know. It just really makes me think. It makes me think about all those guys, you know, that we worked with. You know, everybody.
Yeah.
You know, I know a couple guys myself that are lifers, and they're seriously just sitting there waiting for the calendars to open back up at this point, because they're like, I can't get anything else. You know, even myself, like I've pondered Ubering or whatever. And I'm like, if any job application I can throw in, they're going to ask me, what have you been doing for the past 5 or so years? You know, they're going to, if I want to apply for like unemployment, they're going to be like, okay, so where do you unemployed from? You know, I can't say anything like, well, music.
Right.
You know, so it's kind of fucked up, especially with the guys like back then, you and I were making a living just doing shows like at the drop of a hat. You know what I mean? Like, hey, you want to come work? Okay, cool. You know?
Let's do it. Right.
But,
yeah.
I don't know, man.
Yeah, it's different. It's a completely different world, but, you know, you got to make the best of it, you know, and that's the thing these days with me is, try not to take shit too seriously, you know, I mean, obviously take things seriously, but you just don't have to, don't worry too much. And that's my new outlook on life. You know, I'm talking about me today compared to me 10 years ago. Like, I don't really give a fuck about plans next month. Like, you know, it's cool. Let's make it through the week. And after that, let's figure it out again. You know, and life is way too short, man. Yeah, I know. Because back then I'd be like, hey, do you want to go see a show in 3 months? And but that's how I planned things back then. Because I was always so, you know, trying to stay ahead of the curve and all this shit. But now it's just like, man, I'm more excited to just stay home and lay in bed with my cats. And my dog, instead of, I rarely go out to shows anymore. Being in the industry, very, very, very rarely do I go out to big shows, mind you. Like, I can't even remember the last like huge, like big mainstream show I was at was, I think it was 2 years ago. I went and saw Fleetwood Mac with my wife. But other than that, like, it's like, I don't make an effort to go because it's like I catch myself staring at the rig half the time. So it's like I can't enjoy the show. You know what I mean?
You start like pitying the people who have to build it.
yeah, well, that loadout's going to suck, you know, but sitting there counting the points during the drum solo, you know, or whatever. Yeah. But, yeah, it's totally different nowadays for good and bad, you know.
Are they doing anything in preparation for next year, or like anything? Have you heard anything about it?
The only thing that I know that is actually happening is pretty much the schedule for 2020 is just getting moved to 2021. So
yeah,
everything just got bumped 365 days ahead,
which is crazy.
But as of right now, that's the only thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, and I talked about it on the previous episode of the podcast, like I merely put out a post on Instagram stories asking people what are their thoughts on if we did a couple gigs socially distanced, limited capacity, just to help out the promoters that are like literally like clubs are closing doors for good as we speak, like right now. And
yeah, right.
So it's like you're doing the big gigs and you know even those places are hurting, but like all the clubs that like bands like us would be playing are like shutting doors for good right now, and it's just fucking wild. Yeah. And
you know, they're dropping off the face of the earth.
Yeah. And you know, it's us as a band at our current juncture, it's like we're doing wellness checks with fellow bands, friends. I'm doing wellness checks with promoters, venue owners, like, and you should see like how, I mean, I'm sure you see it when you reach out to your fellow, like, you know, union guys, but like the people like, hey, thank you for fucking even thinking about us right now. You know,
sure.
Hopefully down the line we'll be open and we would love, you know, to have you come out, have some drinks or whatever. Doesn't matter. But I remember I posted like, cause some people were like, we would love for you guys to play even a 50 cap show this fall. If you want like anything to help us sell like some liquor, anything. And like, I was like, well, let me put the meter out there, you know, because people are basically torching bands for putting on shows and some well-deserved, right. Some are well-deserved. But, yeah. You know, even when I said social distance, limited cap, you know, everybody spread out, is like people were like angry with me. And I'm like, dude, I'm just trying to help. I'm trying to help people. I'm trying to help them get out of their house. Everybody's losing their fucking minds in their homes. Like, right. It's crazy. It's just crazy. And it's really scary to think that, like, you know, not only are the big dogs hurting, but the little guys are closing for good. And I'm watching, yeah, you know, booking agents. I'm watching managers. I'm watching bands all stepping away from music because they're like, well, I don't know. I don't know anymore. It's crazy, man. It's a crazy time.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's a real double-edged sword, I think, because it's like, yeah, you want to play for fans and you want to, you know, you bring back the entity of live music again with social distancing or whatever, however people want to do it. Even with all the precautions taken, you know, I still feel like there's people that are just going to just totally boycott it, which is fine. It's their own prerogative to boycott it or be for it or against whatever. But I don't know. It's just, yeah, it's just really weird times right now, man.
I'd say have a stance if you want, but let the people who want to do what they want to do make their own decisions. Let them do what they want without being quote unquote canceled for it. You know what I mean? Like it's a weird time. Exactly. And you know, as with the occult saying here, there is also an occult understanding of living in the nowness, living here right now. And it's like, what would bring joy to people right now? What can I do to help people?
I agree.
And I'm doing what I can, you know, on the socials front, on the podcast, doing vlogs. I'm trying to educate people. I'm trying to enlighten people because I don't know if you've noticed, everyone seems very doom and gloom right now, for lesser words. And it's like, I'm doing all I can to combat this darkness. And it's like, what could I do? That's the next step. How could I help like a lot of people, like factually at one time? It's like, I could play a fucking gig. I can help the fucking promoter. I can help the, you know, the bartenders, the band, the like other bands that want to play, you know, the fans. And it's just like, nope, you're evil. You don't, you know, it's like, what the fuck, man? So, you know, when you asked me to watch the Crowbar show, I was for it, but I was also like, man, I don't want to see
you're a talking about the down show.
Oh yeah, sorry, down show. That's the thing. Like, when this started, like literally when this started in March, I was a week into it talking to my guys. I'm like, let's rent out a venue because all the venues are closed. So what we could do is set up shop at the venue, maybe 5 people in the room, you know, sound guy, lighting guy, whatever. Let's play a show, live stream it, and we'll sell tickets, split the difference between the club and us. So they're still getting a little bit of money and we're getting a little bit of money. Not that it's any worth anything, but you know, that was back then. And then I believe Suicide Silence kind of was like the first band to be like, we're doing a, you know, digital tour. And I was like, that's a fucking killer idea. You know, they're not going to venues or anything, but they set up shop. And then, you know, as most things are, more people start doing like, oh, they're doing it.
Yeah.
And part of me was really bummed that we didn't take advantage of that, you know, early situation, because not only because like, oh, we missed an opportunity for us, but it's like, yo, those venues definitely could have used the help back then compared to now.
I agree.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I've even talked to some promoters. I was like, you can make it a thing. Like once a week, clean out the room, have a band, do a live stream show, sell tickets to it, whatever. You know, like do what you can.
Yeah.
And
I agree.
It's mainly out of concern for people like you, people like, you know, people that are venue owners, whatever. I'm not going to get into it over and over again, but you know, when you were like, hey, why don't you watch the downstream? And I was like, I refuse to let this become like my new normal, quote unquote, as what they're trying to push is this is our new normal. Get used to it. It's like, no, I refuse it. I would rather go see down in a fucking 50 cap room myself. You know what I mean? Because once things open up, it's going to be another 6 to 8 months before bands like our like stature can even get into a room, because everyone's going to be back booked. So it's like, everybody's you got to stream. I'm like, well, what's the point of us doing this if it's all digital? Like, you know, Serpents, like the main thing is the power in the presence. Like you have to be there. As I like our records, but it's nothing compared to like being in the room, you know, watching me.
Yeah.
And tasting my sweat.
Actually, bringing up live streams, I saw that Behemoth is actually rehearsing for a live stream event right now too. So it'll be interesting to see what they bring to the table.
But like you said earlier in the podcast, when you saw Behemoth, it was fine-tuned fucking mayhem. Just, it had a vibe. So like to convey that on a digital realm, you know, let's say I'm in my fucking, in my den, in my boxers, and I'm watching Behemoth. You know what I mean? It's like, I could
it's definitely going to be different. Yeah.
Yeah. I could easily sit there and be like, he's not singing hard enough, or this is boring, or whatever, because it's meant to be heard live.
Yeah. Yeah, there is definitely an aspect missing from it. But and trust me, I would love to be live in person as well. But just, you know, to have something for people to enjoy, to take their minds off of not just the pandemic, but everything else that's going on in the fucking world. Yeah. You know, good on them, you know.
Well, that's
good on you, mate.
Well, that's even like why I barely listen to podcasts anymore, because like literally all of my favorite podcasts, they, or even YouTubers or blogs or news sites, everybody has all of a sudden turned on this, you need to know where I stand and fuck you if you don't agree with it. And
right.
It's just like, yeah, I would love to watch a concert and just take my mind off of it. But even sometimes in the concerts, like somebody's got to say something and then you're like, shit. I wish he didn't say that.
Yep. Yeah, I agree.
I mean, even like I said, like even my favorite podcast, like I'll be listening and then somebody will say something kind of rude and I'm like, no, like I'm not listening to this. It's just negativity. It's spreading negativity. You know, you're thinking about the past. You're thinking about the past. You're torn up about the past. What happened in March and onward? You're fearing the future. Everybody's afraid of the future. Why don't you just concentrate on now? Enjoy the now. Yep. Enjoy the not, I'm going to quote Saint Germain, and the lizard's going to make fun of me for this, but not the present, but the pleasant. Enjoy the nowness.
Yeah, it's a good point.
And, you know, even, you know, I've talked to you off air, obviously, and, you know, you found solace in this time off. A lot of people that I know have been happy, you know, being at home with their families versus grinding. And it's just, you know, the system, so to speak, is set up so that we are, even though we're all stuck at home, we're all supposed to be grinding. You gotta put out content. You gotta do this. You gotta do that. I'm like, dude, is there never any rest? It's crazy. Yeah, but
I agree.
But that's why Kiss should have left their makeup on. No, I'm just kidding.
And there you go. And that is moral of the story.
Yeah, no. But yeah, man, it's you know, you've been a longtime listener of the podcast and an even longer
since day one
friend, and you know more than probably anybody. You know, podcasts are weird for me, you know, but it's also a way of spreading some sort of light, whether if it's a funny story or, you know, a quip about the industry or life as an artist or, you know, bats in the house. You know, it's my way of combating the negativity in this world. Same thing with music, you know, and I would rather share that with my friends and family and even my road friends if they want to come on, you know, whoever that wants to join me in doing that. And I don't know, I would love to have you on more. I know this episode is kind of limited in time, but I wanted to get out of the way, you know, introducing you. We haven't even touched base on a lot of the spooky ooky shit you would probably get into.
There's a lot more to cover.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, the last time I saw you, I was laying face down on my couch from drinking a handle and a half.
Yeah, boy.
Of whiskey, so it wasn't a good night to podcast.
For anyone that is wondering, is I pretty much came up to the manor with my better half and stood the puppet, the little mannequin of Andy's diet and his keto, and I pretty much just snapped its neck. right in half for anyone who wants to know. And I was like, get, drive this into you, bud. And I just kept, you know, but,
so much cake.
Yeah. The last time I, oh boy. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That, well, you was, know what? That was for good reason. That was, it did me good because I got off keto and I went more holistic, more, what's good for my body, you know, drinking right. certain minerals, vitamins. You know, I went, I don't know if I told you this, but I switched to the Mediterranean diet, which is way more healthier.
Yeah.
Like it's, which also helps my brain, helps my spirit. And you can just kind of tell looking around in the world that, more people should take care of their, what they put into themselves, you know, but that night was a rude awakening.
I agree. For sure.
And I apologize that night was, for passing out on you.
Oh, don't worry, pal. Don't worry. We've, from the early years of drinking Schampipple and Schomburg to, whiskey in, other parts Manor. Of the world or other parts at the Manor and countless other nights. Do we need to bring up the, firework escapade at the Skin Burlesque here many moons ago, blowing up mortars with no tube in the street and just rolling the dice and seeing what's going to happen? We've had many a night. There's absolutely no need to apologize for having a few too many sarsaparillas.
Giggling like schoolgirls in the middle of the night, hiding from the cops.
Hiding we in know, my pitch black house from the cops is.
We know you're in there.
We have the. We know you're in the field. Come out. As they shine a light into the field across from my fortress, as we're all sitting inside laughing like Statler and Waldorf from the Muppets in the front room.
They probably thought it was teenagers, God. But it was actually full-grown men.
Full mid-20-year-old men just, hey, they drove away. Let's fucking blow another one off, bud. And that's exactly what we did. But, yeah, that was really...
There's a lot of stories. There's a lot of stories, and we can dive into that another time. But I wanted to introduce to the world who the Pied Piper of Creed is, what you do, what you stand for, and, you know, that you're also a music man, and you deserve a little recognition as well, you know? We're all music.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate you having me on.
No problem. Is there Absolutely. Anything you like to say to the folks? Probably not.
I would just like to say keep supporting the 6M podcast. There's bigger and brighter things on the way from this podcast. And anyone who's a fan of it or anyone who's checking it out for the first time, I would suggest staying tuned and watching for what's coming on the horizon.
A lot of pressure. A lot of pressure. No, I'm just kidding.
Gotcha.
Hi. No, and on that note,
Hot Seat Slinger.
Oh shit. On that note, I think that's about a wrap for this episode. I would love to have Al on again, and hopefully that will be soon, and we can dive into a little bit of more of the mischief and the magic and a little bit less of the mystery next time. But if you guys enjoyed this episode or any of the episodes before it, please, please, please subscribe to the podcast. If you can, rate the podcast or comment wherever applicable. Literally every bit helps. We do this with literally no support from the establishment as of right now. So literally all we need is your help and your support. And if you want to join in on the fun, if you want to get angry, you want to yell at me, or if you want to suggest any future guests, or if you want to suggest any future topics, make sure to join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/the6mpodcast. That's THESIXM podcast, at least while we still have Facebook. And as always, if you guys can show my band Serpents US some love, all we're asking for you guys to do right now, if you haven't already, is head to our YouTube and head to our Spotify and give us a follow on both. You can find our YouTube at youtube.com/user/WeAreSerpents, and you can find us on Spotify at Serpents US. Feel free to, I don't know, throw us on one of your favorite playlists, something you listen to, you know, while you're going to work or working out or whatever. Literally every bit helps, whether I'm talking about the podcast, whether I'm talking about YouTube, whether I'm talking about Spotify. A simple click or three clicks would mean literally the world to me. So until next time, thank you for joining us and thank you for listening, and hope to see you next time.